Welcome back to Embrace the Chaos, brought to you by the Celtic Chaos Community. I'm your host, Joe, and in this beautiful and fascinating episode, I'm joined by Natural Symphony. Natural Symphony is a sound and light artist from London who uses the natural biorhythms of plants to create music and visuals, and he reforests the world with the prophets. Natural Symphony enjoyed his first burn in 2023, and his Celtic Chaos connection commenced nearly a year prior at an encounter at ADE. We traverse the mystical and the mundane turn of events that has brought Natural Symphony to this point in his musical life. This episode was recorded in a studio in Hackney Wick, London, the day after London Decompression 2023, and we reflect on a year-long adventure together and explore the beautiful weaving journey through the Irish landscape and how Natural Symphony infuses his music and visuals with the biorhythm of plants. Before we delve into this episode, I would like to take a moment to fill you in on all the beautiful chaos that we've been bringing to the world since we left the Playa last year. It's been a truly beautiful year so far. We kicked off our fundraising activities with our annual Halloween night in the iconic Galway Distillery, headlined by live artist and techno producer Christopher Coe, with his epic live techno set. In November, we crossed the Irish Sea to bring Celtic Chaos to our second installation at London Decompression 23, headlined by VNMT with a live set. It was such a vibrant and uplifting decompression, and on the journey home, our hearts were truly overflowing. At Christmas, we held the fourth volume of our Christmas Hooli, reviving the iconic Cuban nightclub in Galway, headlined by DJ-producer Richie Blacker. Not once to rest, this year Monarch hosted our Paddy's Day fundraiser in March, headlined by Tara Brooks and Ovius. And in April, we held our inaugural Celtic Chaos Belfast Bash. It's been a long time coming, bringing the chaos to Belfast. And they typically bring the chaos to us. A night that will always be held close in the hearts of those that were there in the historic Masonic Hall Rosetta Belfast. We want to thank everybody who danced with us, everybody who donated their time, energy, music and presence. This all helps bring Celtic Chaos back to the Playa again this year in 2024, and the countdown is well and truly on. So without further ado, let's embrace the chaos.
So we have just finished the London Decompression, which is exactly where we met last year in 2022. You played with Celtic Chaos at London Postcom and just most recently at Burning Man. So there's been a lot of ground that we've travelled between then and now over the last 12 months. But can you just start by taking me back to the start and tell me a bit more about what got you into music? When we saw you at Postcom, I was just blown away last year because you're playing a live set, but you are using the biofeedback of actual real life plants by hooking electrodes onto them. And the biofeedback that comes through is actually then put into your live set.
Yeah, so they control everything really. They control my sounds, they control the visuals. I do laser shows with them, installations, live performances and sound healings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's become quite a varied project now. And it's quite a deep side to the project too. It's a reforestation project as well. It's supporting lots of different projects and replanting trees as well with the prophet. Yeah, essentially it's music, visuals and installations controlled by plants and trees.
So tell our listeners and myself, how did this journey start?
So I actually been making music, DJing and producing for about at least 15 years now. Well, October 2019, I went to Bali and I was just sitting in my hotel and this lady come up to me and asked me if she could do, she was an astrologist. Mm-hmm. So she's asked me, could I give you a free like astrology reading? I said, yeah, why not? Just sitting there by the pool, just chilling anyway. So she's gone away with all my date of birth and place I was born and all of like these questions she asked me. She's come back and she's just spoke at me and just described myself better than I knew myself. Mm-hmm. It's like it was really amazing what she said. But she said to me, there's a pyramid here. You need to go to this pyramid, have a sound healing. So I did. I went there and it was all right. It was pretty average. As I was leaving, the guy who was leading that, he said to me, you need to come back tomorrow. We do a really intimate sound and light ceremony here. And the sound healing I'd just done was 60 people in this pyramid. This one is actually, tomorrow is 10. It's 10 people. And we've got these lights here, which can put you into a psychedelic state without you taking anything. So I was really intrigued. And actually, me and my friends, we was actually supposed to be leaving that day, heading to a different city. I ended up staying back just by myself and going back to this pyramid the next day. And so I arrived, and there was 10 of us put under this, what you see in an office. It was just a long tube light. And basically, the strobe flashes at the same speed your brain fires at when you're dreaming.
Mm.
So when you're under it, got this flicker in your eyelids, and it will just slow your brain down to dream state. So when it's your only signal input, brain has no choice but to slow down and match it. And so we had 3 sessions of 20 minutes under this light. First 20 minutes, I was very, very skeptical because it was very visual.
Mm-hmm.
I was seeing all sorts of geometrical patterns, full color spectrum. And I was just, I'm so sure all of these patterns, everything is in this light. It didn't make sense. I couldn't get my head around it. Then a second 20 minutes starts. And as soon as it started, everything just went dark. Everything pitch black. I was floating around in atmosphere. And I could hear thousands of voices telling me, I'll keep his name a secret because it's quite a personal thing for him, but his voices were saying to me, tell your friend back home, everything is all right. Everything is as it's meant to be, mm-hmm. and always is. Do not stress. Everything is in order. So when I actually left that pyramid, I turned my phone back on and he messaged me. It was, oh, happy birthday. It was 5 days late, that message, actually. So I messaged him. I was like, it's funny you just messaged me right now. I've just had this experience about you. And it was just to tell you everything is all right. Everything's as it's meant to be. And he's like, you don't know what this means to me right now. And about 3 months later, he tells me, you remember that day you messaged me? He was like, that's the only day I've ever been suicidal in my life.
Wow.
And see, I still was trying to get my head around that one because obviously we're in the opposite sides of the world and this just came through.
And even just the steps it took for you to be in that pyramid.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so the third session of 20 minutes under that light, as soon as the light started again, I just had the full-on vision. And it was kind of... It was kind of a dream, but it felt like I was watching it in a different place in my mind to where a dream feels, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost watching a film in my eyelids. Mm-hmm. But the vision I had was of this tree, and it was the scene out of Game of Thrones. It's this hugest, hugest oak tree. And this tree said to me, energy transfers between anything that's alive. So be careful of your mood. Because it's not just human-to-human interaction where you can send out a bad vibe and other people will feel it. It has a ripple effect through everything. So nature feels it too. So it started showing me examples. And if you leave your house in a foul mood because you're late for work, because you couldn't find your keys, that's not an acceptable reason to be walking out with
mm-hmm.
the negative vibration. Because you're going to be driving down the road, you'll end up with someone up or just driving with an attitude, and that person is now arriving at work in a mood because someone else has done something, mm-hmm. because they're in a mood, and it just has this ripple effect. So this tree said, it's not just human to human that you're going to spread this. Trees are feeling it, plants are feeling it, nature is feeling it. And it said, as a whole, humanity's energy is too low. So I guess just because of the pressures that we're under from day to day,
mm-hmm.
the presence of media, the way they portray everything, there's so many different things that just causing bad vibes and pressures and just changing the way that we vibrate naturally. So this tree said to me, you need to start making music, which is going to uplift people, but also make them aware of this unseen connection between nature and humanity. And it started showing me scenes of me playing on theatre stages with orchestras of plants. And when I come out of it, my friends had already left, had gone to another city, which was about 2 hours in a taxi from me. And that drive, I'll never forget that drive, because it was all through nature, really. A lot of forests, a lot of hills, and
the rainforest through Bali.
It was just amazing, and that was a two-hour drive of just the most inspiring thoughts and creative ideas, just constantly flowing. And I really felt like I had been shown everything you want to do is possible, and you can do it, but it's not how you thought it was going to be. You need to do this and fulfill what you've just witnessed and learned. So, yeah, I basically got back to my friends. I'm so grateful that I stayed back and just did all of that, because just what has happened.
And so at that stage, in the two-hour taxi ride, did you have the completion of how you were going to bring inspiring, uplifting music to people that would help them with nature, or did that come later?
Not at all, to be honest. The more I thought about it, it's actually just ticked so many boxes for me, because I can do something where I can really have a positive impact on the world and people, rather than just, because for 15 years now I've been making music for people to dance to, which is amazing, but I wanted more, really.
Something deeper.
Yeah. And so I was just having real ideas about just different things I could do, but I was still yet to work out how I was going to do this. And I was actually working at the time as a technician. So this was October, and then for months I was like, I just need time. I just need to be able to just sit for longer than just a couple hours in the evenings every night. I really need a solid few weeks to just start researching and just working out how I'm going to do this. And then lockdown came, and I basically was in the middle of moving at that time. And the place I was moving into, the landlord said, look, lockdown's happened, so I'm going to keep the house myself. So I ended up having to get all my stuff and move back to my mum's. So I was, this is the perfect opportunity now to be looking into this. So I started researching what's detectable in a plant. Because I knew if I was able to find a way of detecting varied data within the plant, I could use the different figures and different bits of data to do different things.
And had you ever seen anything done before?
No, not at the time. I have now. I've seen a few similar kind of machines have been developed. But yeah, at the time I was completely unaware of this. So anyway, I was looking at what is detectable. And I actually found all these research papers from a guy in the 60s. His name is Clive Baxter. And he released all these papers about his findings of his work between plants and lie detectors.
Oh, wow.
So I was, okay, so if a lie detector works on a plant, how do you make a lie detector? And actually, the concept of it was pretty simple for me to replicate. But instead of it outputting its information onto a graph, it just outputs into my computer, which I can decode and let each individual digit or piece of information trigger sounds or light in different instruments.
And what software decodes that information?
So I've got quite a few different programs that I'm running on this. So I'm using Max for Live, Ableton, Touch Designer, some laser programs. Really depends what I'm doing.
So does that decode the data and then use it to do the visuals? Or
so it comes in on my machine, and then I put it into Max for Live, and then I can just split the information out of it.
Okay.
And route it to whatever I'm doing. Do installations with LEDs. Sometimes it's projection mapping. Sometimes it's laser. And if it's music, it goes into musical instruments. Mm-hmm. So each really is a different way of doing it. But yeah, it was basically through this guy, Clive Baxter, that I found out. Okay, so that's pretty interesting that they do. His paper's insane. The information that he's come out, that he's discovered, is really incredible. And that started a journey about learning about our connection with plants. Mm-hmm. Because his research is saying that nature fills us and fills our intention. So he's got one paper where he's saying you couldn't get any reaction on a plant, and he was watering it, putting it in sun, in dark, nothing. And then one day he thought, I wonder what happens if I burn it, and the gauge moved. So he's like, oh, that's quite interesting, it's not done that before. So he didn't have a lighter on him. He went next door to get one. He come back and the gauge is going crazy now. So he said, he put the lighter down and the gauge has just relaxed. So he's and started running all these tests and found out, okay, so we haven't even got to do anything to them. They're already feeling it just by our intention.
Wow.
So we're connected with them on an energetic level. So aside from being able to now develop a way of communicating with them to perform with, it sent me on a rabbit hole of deeper connection with nature. And somebody actually sent me a video. It's a TV advert they did a few years back now. And that was an anti-bullying campaign. And so they got two identical plants. They put one in each room. And they got two schools to come down. One school bullied the plant. The other school loved the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And they just recorded their messages and played them on a loop to them plants for 6 weeks. After 6 weeks, the bullied plant had died and the loved one had outgrown its box.
Wow.
So why does that work? Yeah. How is this happening? So it's actually a little bit deeper than intention too. So everything is essentially vibration. And everything is essentially sound and light. So, and I mean, sound is light. It's just lower on the frequency spectrum. Mm-hmm. So I started reading into this and I had my machine made by then. So I was getting all this information out of the plants. And
was this a custom-made machine or is this something you could just buy off of the...
No, the one I've got, I've had a company who make really cool modular instruments. They've pressed me some of my own machines now. But originally I started making this with jump cables and breadboards and Raspberry Pi machines and
wow.
And but now I've got some really nice some really nice pressed PCB boards.
Lovely.
And so basically when I was researching if you can bully a plant, love a plant, why is that working? And some of the information that I was getting out of the plants and some research that I'd done, I found out that the tree in the vision was right. Nature does feel us and our energetic output. And by us speaking, we're putting out a vibration. By us feeling, we have energy centers, a chakra system, and each energy center is vibrating a different vibration. And
it projects it out.
And it sends a ripple out. And there's energy around us everywhere, which is being changed constantly by what we're putting out. And them centres are changed by mood and emotion too. So turns out, so when a human experiences unconditional love, it sends out a vibration of 528 hertz, which is actually what plants vibrate at during photosynthesis. So by you sending intentional love to a plant, you vibrate at the frequency the plants need to thrive. So when you hear people say, oh, if you love your plants, they grow, it's actually that it's actually work. It does work. It's, you are vibrating at what the plant needs. So in reality, humanity could actually heal the world if we was all just going around being a beacon of love. But it actually works the opposite way too. So if you are feeling down, just go to the park in the day. Go out in nature in the day, because while they're going through photosynthesis, they're vibrating at your love frequency. So we're not just sharing a breath with nature, we're in an energetic cycle with them too. So if you are not feeling your optimum, if you are not feeling a beacon of love and super happy, the vibrational output you've got isn't healing anything. It's just having a negative impact on everything around you, even though you can't necessarily see it. But people around you, animals around you, your dog can tell straight away if there is something wrong with you.
Also, one thing that I find interesting on a similar vein is that, you know, when you're projecting that negative energy that you're feeling inside, also bear in mind, we're always continually stepping into the immediate aura of our own energy. With every step we take, we're stepping into our own energy.
Yeah.
And if you're continuously stepping into negative energy, it's only going to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
And it's just those little acts of positivity which compound, and you're always stepping into the best light possible.
Yeah, definitely. I never actually really saw myself doing this, to be honest. It was always just music and I just loved creating. And now I found myself in a position where I've come full circle now with what happened in that vision, because now I'm doing sound healings and electronic music performances with the plant, and I've also made one of these strobe lights too. So I now do sound and light healings with the plants. So, and they're really something else. I've had people having full-blown out-of-body experiences, just having breakdowns and shifting really deep traumas and things during the sessions. Yeah, it's a bit different to a normal sound healing because it's controlled by nature. You just feel really connected to it and it's very psychedelic, but you're not taking anything. It's off of sound and light. It's literally just vibrating. It's flashing, slowing your brain down to induce own psychedelic state. Mm-hmm. So it's a very powerful experience. And then obviously on the other end of the spectrum, I've got techno shows. But even that, it's nice to just get people dancing. And I love it when I can just do a forest performance. Especially I've done quite a few this year. And a lot of the time they give me a piece of the forest where I can have an installation with the forest is just singing throughout the day. Or controlling lights, mm-hmm. and then at night do a performance with my electrodes on the trees. Mm-hmm. And then when everyone is barefoot dancing in the forest and the trees are all changing sounds throughout the performance, it's the best.
It must be a full circle biofeedback because the people are grounding into the trees and that's coming back out. And it's
And you often notice it as well, the plants will be playing really chilled in the day. And then when everybody's in there at night dancing with it, what's coming from the computer is way more erratic. Mm-hmm. So the data is all over the place. So it'd be interesting to see what it all meant. But for now, yeah, I've got enough going on with making sound and light shows from them.
So I was on a beach in Mayo in the summer and you were playing and it was a really picturesque location. And it was sort of midday. And I went up onto the hill on the sand dunes with the ocean over to the left of me and where you were playing over to the right of me and did a lovely yoga and sun salutations surrounded by the most gorgeous scenery. And that was really powerful as well, you know. Tell me a bit about how, when you're playing live with the plants, obviously the data that comes through is a surprise to you. So you really must be on your toes with that.
Yeah. So I've got basically quite a lot of plants there. Each of them, basically DJing the plants because they're all giving me different patterns. Some of them are playing quite fast. Some of them are slow. Some of them are really sustained. So it depends what they're doing. So if I've got one that's playing quite slow and sustained, I can just give that pads to play. And then it just is, I can get another one. If it's playing really fast, maybe I can give that melody. And then the other one might be playing bass lines. And then basically, as soon as one is doing something, does something like that, I put that on a loop. And then the next sound and the next plant, when it does something that fits or something that I can just loop that. And it's just a case of just looping and layering, playing along with drum machines. Kind of works the same for visuals as well.
Are you doing this all live? Or have you pre-done
it? Depends really, because the thing is the plants fill you. So different environments have different effects. I often find that actually club venues, especially if people are really drunk in there, it's a bit difficult. They don't really play amazingly, I find. Mm-hmm. Festivals is really nice. There's always a nice connection with them and they respond really well to people. Installations is quite nice, but yeah, I often find if people, particularly when they're drunk, it's a bit, then they would just stop to just sort of cut in and out, and it's hard to just rely on them. And
if you're playing them completely live, do you have a main song that you're layering this stuff over, or is it a brand new song that's being created?
So it depends. So I write a lot of music at home, so sometimes it's nice to just bring some music that I've written just to be able to test out, which has all been made by the plants, but it's nice to just see how crowds react. I've also got in my live set a bank of clips that I know would work, mm-hmm. just in case I'm struggling to get something out of the plant. Mm-hmm. But I've also got things that I know the plants, I've got ways where I can sustain the notes if I need to. Mm-hmm. So I've got lots of backups in case they don't flow exactly how I want to. Most of the time, the plant is doing something, at least. There's always something going on in there.
Type of gigs that you do, especially since, you know, you've thrown yourself into this full-time you can select the type of gigs that you want to do, which means they're more high frequency and stuff that aligns with your intention.
It's really nice. I'm lucky to be in a position where I can just sort of decide what I want to do, and just there's not really anybody doing it. So it's quite nice that I can just come up with ideas and just pitch to people, or people come to me and we've got this space, what could you do with it? And it's really nice just to be able to come up with things and have such an impact on people, and it's changed quite a few people's visions on things, myself included, to be honest. I was one of those people that just, plants was just something that was just growing on the side of the road. It was just over the park. I didn't ever really feel connected to them. It was just there. But now I'm...
It's a whole living entity with its own...
Yeah, and now every time I see one, it makes me check myself. What is my energetic output? What am I putting out? And you just end up monitoring your mood a lot. And most of the time you realise, why am I annoyed? It's because of something absolutely ridiculous.
Or imagined.
Yeah, you're just arguing with a fake person in your head about nothing. And you're just walking around all day in a mood. I'm just so much calmer now. Because I know it's just, one, it's no good for yourself. But two, actually, it's no good for anything. Why are you vibrating so low? There's no need. We can literally heal the world if humanity was just this beacon of love. And I think we're pushed into this low frequency far too often. So that's what I'm doing. I'm just trying to raise the vibes. Mm-hmm.
So from last year meeting at London post-compression, fast forward to maybe 8 weeks ago, and you played live at Burning Man at Celtic Chaos.
Yeah, I did.
Obviously because of the temperatures and the conditions out there. Well, I'm presuming it was because of the hot temperatures. You played with massive crystals.
Yeah.
There was five of them?
Yeah, that was actually because it's on the list of things you cannot bring. There's this biohazard to the environment there.
It's a very, very harsh climate, even for humans, never mind plants.
So yeah, it doesn't even have its own plants, really. So they was under no circumstances can they come here, because they're just going to perish. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to disintegrate, and it can just cause harm to the desert and obviously to the plants.
And they're not indigenous to that specific area so you're introducing something that shouldn't be there.
So I just made some changes, adjustments to my equipment, and I've been able to detect frequencies of crystals. They're not just stones, there's detectable frequency on them, and a lot of them give me much stronger signals than plants do. Mm-hmm. And so
I bet that was a bit of a revelation for you whenever you discovered that.
Yeah, so my original machine worked a little bit on them, and it was actually a friend of mine. She messaged me, she was like, oh, I really want to come and see in person what you're doing. So she came to the studio and was just there for a few hours just playing with the plants and getting them to act. And she was like, I wonder if crystals work. She just happened to have a pocket full of them, mm-hmm. little fairy. So we just connected them, and the first three started playing. And I was like, no, this is mad. I went outside and out the front and got a stone, come back, put it on, didn't do anything. And interestingly, only really works on uncut, polished crystals.
Okay.
All these nice, shiny, little round, tumbled ones, they don't do anything. So whatever the process is that they go through to be nice and shiny and pretty, it's just turning it to stone, essentially, taking the vibration out of it.
So similarly, if you're carrying stones around for those specific purposes of, you know, energetic healing or grid healing and stuff, if they're polished, they're not having any effect either?
No, it needs... Well, not that my machine is saying so. Okay. I'm not getting anything out of them. Mm-hmm. But these uncut raw ones, giving a real, real strong signal out of them.
Could you see yourself using that more in the future then as a result of that? Or do you prefer plants?
I mean, the project is about plants. Just raising awareness of the connection with nature. Because it's a reforestation project too. So
talk to me a little bit more about the reforestation project.
After lockdown, I'd spent nearly 2 years or however long lockdown ended up being, working every day, waking up, for developing the machine, or once it was ready, I was just going around all the parks near my mom's, recording all of her house plants in her garden, learning how to use this and learning things. Like, I learned a little bit of code and just developing the skills that I need to be able to create the things I want to create. After lockdown, I had somebody message me and said, we got an installation for the Chelsea Flower Show, which in England is a big deal.
Oh, it's huge. So,
well, basically what happened, we went in, I put this installation, the sound installation in, and it was, we put an ambisonic sound system, connected five plants in this cabin, and people could come in, touch the plants, sit there and just listen to the plants sing. The next day we come back and there's a silver medal hanging on the installation.
Wow.
I didn't know it was a competition. I thought it was a show. And I was like, we just come second. And I was,
it's super prestigious as well.
It's really mad. I just was not expecting that first thing as well. And then, funnily enough, Glastonbury Festival saw it. I had some interviews on BBC TV there. And then Glastonbury rung and was, you need to bring that installation to us after. So I did that. And then the Barbican got in touch, and then Noisily got in touch, and then Houghton got in touch, and everything just started rolling really, really fast. My first year, I played most of the bucket list places that I had, and I've been trying all these years, working so hard, never giving up on what I wanted to do. And then as soon as I started introducing plants and following what I'd been shown, there was just so much flow. It was just on the right path now. And everything before had just been a lesson. Now when I look back at it, I realise that everything in my life, all the jobs that I've done, have all been essential to do what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. I spent so many years as like working on cars. I was actually just learning electrics for what I needed to do now, and just gaining a technical mind, and learning to be a good problem solver.
Uh-huh.
It's just been so useful. And I actually quit that because I just had no time. I just really was trying to just push the music, and I started learning sound engineering and lighting, just events on building installations with people. So I was doing that, and that was freeing up my time.
And then how did you come to get the connection with Celtic Chaos as things began to spiral?
Yeah, so I was just playing a lot of gigs. Yeah. And a friend of mine is a DJ of a party quite regularly in Amsterdam. My friend, who was one of the owners of that, she rang me and was like, oh, I'm in London. What are you doing? I'm here for the weekend. And as I'm playing tonight, could come along. And she'd never seen me using the plants before. After I play, she's, you need to do that at Burning Man. That was amazing, and it's just so up their street. That's like one of the big ones on the bucket list. I really, really want to do that.
So you'd never been before as a non-performer?
Never been there, no, at all.
Okay.
This year was the first time.
Okay.
But
you had a desire. You knew you wanted to go before you ever met us.
I've always wanted to go to Burning Man. Yeah, always. And I never really met many people who have been. But yeah, so basically she was like, look, I went last year and I met somebody there briefly. I got his details. I don't know him very well, but I'll send him a message and see what happened. I actually sent a lot of like links to her of like things that I'm doing. She forwarded them to him, and then Dahi contacted me a few days later. He was like, this sounds really interesting, but I can't really get my head around it. But we're doing something, I think it was called Burning Pub. It was like a little like burner community meetup.
And they get together once a month here in London.
Yeah. But he was like, we're going to do this one in Amsterdam. That's actually my friend who like mainly organises it out there. But he was like, we're going over there and we're going to do something with them. He was like, why don't you come? Mate Chandra was like, yeah, just come stay with me. Dahi ended up staying with her too.
Mm-hmm.
And this was over the period of ADE. It was just the three of us out on a rampage in Amsterdam for 3 or 4 days. And so much love for Dahi. He's just became a brother with me that weekend.
And then come November, you're on the bill to do post-com for Celtic Chaos. So
we basically had such a good few days. And you know, it's like when you have that much of an intense period with somebody, mm-hmm. you just build like a deeper connection, like pretty quick. And he said to me, bro, I love what you're doing. He was like, you're with us now. And he's kept that word. I have literally been side by side with everything Celtic Chaos have done. It's been such a journey. I've done so much of you guys. I've loved it. I've like completely fell in love with Ireland. It's just stolen my heart this year.
Yeah.
I've had probably, I don't know, is it 4 or 5 trips now over to you?
Yeah, 5 trips I'd say in a year, maybe 4 anyway.
And
we've had 2 over to London.
Yeah.
We've just completed our second London decom, and you played on the main
stage. America
together,
and it's just been such, I've met the most incredible people.
It really does become a family, doesn't it?
It really is, yeah. It's what I love about what you do. It's very, very community-based. You've got a very strong community behind you, and you can't help it from becoming like a family vibe. Then it's and everybody knows each other,
and everybody has like the common goal at heart and pure intentions.
Yeah,
and is talented in some which way, either musically, academically, building wise, spatial wise, visualization, technical, humor.
Yeah.
And it all just sort of comes together so beautifully.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago, you got to see Burning Man 2023, Animalia, the year that was. So obviously you would have heard a lot of the stories, and you've been excited to go for many, many years yourself.
Yeah.
Let's start at the start. You get to Burning Man, you arrive. What was the first thing that you saw that sort of made you go, wow?
So it was a bit tricky, wasn't it, Burning Man this year, because it was raining before we could go in. So
you were going in for build as well, isn't that
right?
I
was in for build. And my friend Lauren, she wanted to do an installation. She had something designed for Burning Man for a while, and when I said that I was going, she was like, oh, look, I've had this design for ages. And so I was like, oh, look, that looks wicked, what you want to do. I will, like, pass it to my mate and see what he says. And then Dahi was like, that's amazing. He was like, let's get them there. Collaborating with her, putting the light in on these two, originally 3 10-metre totems.
So next year, the 3 totems will be erect. This year, we had obviously the big rain that happened during Burning Man. But for those that don't know, there was also a big rain that happened during build week. So normally we would be feet on the ground on the Monday and have a week-long build. Intense rain meant that for most people, it was like Wednesday, some people Thursday, before they could get in and start building. So our team, who had actually pre-built the totems in the yard and then transported them up, they had to like put them all back together. And these were like,
there was 10 meters,
30 feet
or something.
Huge. So the third one didn't get put together. I think next year. So next year there will be 3.
It was lucky any of them like went up, to be honest, because there's just so many struggles. Obviously, we was like 2 days late getting onto site. Even when we got onto site, it wasn't like
firm ground.
I mean, it was dried, but it wasn't. It was very difficult still to like put really, really like heavy loads on things. Mm-hmm. And then a trailer with a couple containers break down somewhere in California with the totems on. So we ended up having to go out, take a lot of weight off of him, come back. That took about 15 hours round trip to do that. That was all through one night. I think another lorry or something broke down. I think our cherry picker didn't arrive. That all was delayed. The thing is everything is all booked to come in on this day. Mm-hmm. So when they say, oh no, now it's 2 days,
they've got other jobs.
These companies have got other jobs in. And then obviously you've got whole of Burning Man trying to rearrange transport, and it just caused quite a few
domino
nightmares.
Effect.
So the fact that any of them went up was was amazing, to be honest, because it was quite touch and go.
Yeah, because I believe like Agave, which is camped just up from us, lent us their cherry picker.
Did, yeah.
While we were waiting on ours, and let us do so much with it. And then we went, you know, and help them with like different bits and pieces assembling their camp. That's the beautiful thing about each camp, they really do pull together to support each other.
Yeah, it was amazing. I loved it so much. Just like the ethos concept of Burning Man is just how things should be. For me, it's living the ideal situation. It's like a bunch of creatives have just decided to move to the moon and live by sharing and giving and being kind. And
artistic.
There's no money, and they're just creating as wild as they want to, like literally just letting their mind run free with no limits.
Or no critiques, no artist
That's
art
it.
Critiques.
No, there's no judgment. Everyone can just be who they want to be, do what they want to do, make what they want to make. I remember before I went, a friend of mine had been, and he said to me, it's not a festival.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, of course it's a festival.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, for me, I just had it in my head. It was like the American Glastonbury.
Okay.
That's what I thought it was going to be like in the desert. It's different. Like, it's not a festival. It has a different energy to it. I mean, all festivals that I've ever been to, the festival has its own stages. They like curate everything. Most of the time it's in a tent, circus tent, a stretch tent, typical setup, little bit of decoration. People just get trashed in there.
Yeah.
But at Burning Man doesn't provide anything except infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Burning Man stages there, really. There's not like the people bring everything.
Yeah.
So with that contribution from everybody comes a respect of everything. People just don't just turn up and just abuse everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much care and so much interest and like positivity from people, and people are just happy to just express that. Yeah, and obviously there's no money. You can just walk into anywhere and people will just feed you, people will just give you drinks and things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's like everywhere else it's just like a hierarchy of like who you are. You have to be someone to get the wristband to go in this place. You can't go backstage unless you're like, you do what you want there. Like, you can just meet like
anybody.
Yeah, you don't, there isn't this like,
there's no divisible ego, really. There's no divisible barrier between, say, performers and common folk.
Yeah.
Everybody creates the festival.
That's
and
it.
Everybody's it's on an equal standing.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting paid for what they do.
No, that's it. Everyone is buying their ticket. It doesn't matter who you are there, like everybody is like contributing to it. I think it's something that I will like try and make a regular place to visit, just to like try new things out there as well. And yeah, it's just something where you can just freely test ideas and just try things, and you can go as crazy as you want and it doesn't matter. You can just let your ideas run wild and just see what happens, how people perceive it. And just, yeah, I just found it just like a fascinating experience. I think I actually only really spent a couple of days actually exploring the player. I don't think you could cover it all in a week if you went there.
For me personally, I probably can do about 10% in a normal year.
Yeah.
But then obviously being cut short by the rain and being obviously cut short again by a really intense build situation, getting in late and then having some of the stuff delivered late, you know, it really meant that it was a more labour-intensive experience than it would have been in previous years.
Yeah.
And then obviously there was shelter in place, so you couldn't go out and see very much either. But then again, too, with that, I think that sometimes the magic of Burning Man can be found in the smaller moments as well.
Yeah.
You know, you don't necessarily have to travel incredibly far. You know, you can have lots of experiences within your own camp. But yeah, I think a lot of people experience that where, you know, they didn't get to see all the things that they wanted, but you get the burn you need, not the burn you want.
Somebody actually said to me, it was like, it doesn't matter what year you come, you're always going to be up against one of the elements.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's too dusty, it's too sunny, this year is just too wet. And like they said, there's been years before where it's been that dusty, you've not gone out for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always up against something.
Or else, you know, you're up against yourself.
That's it, yeah.
There's a storm going on inside you.
Then somebody else said to me, there's a saying, the player doesn't give you what you want, it gives you what you need.
Yes.
And that was like, yeah, it was really nice having them two conversations, because I just kind of looked at everything a bit differently then. And then our neighbours actually came over.
Mickey Beach. Yeah.
I remember they came over and was like, oh, I hope you're all right. We've got you some burgers.
Oh, yes.
Brought us like plates of food over. Just checked in on us, make sure everybody was safe and had food. And it was just nice, like, because you just saw a stronger, like, community spirit come through when there was, like, a bit of a mad situation going on.
Yeah, people did band together a lot more, like, and we were blessed with amazing neighbours, as most people were. Like, you know, we had agave lounge, we had Funky Monkey, we had Mickey Beach. So those would have been like our immediate neighbors, like, and just more than hospitable.
Yeah.
Generous, nice and kind. And then we were so fortunate ourselves, you know, we have a camp of like 150 people, and the rain gave us an even stronger bond. It meant that we could all just pull together and be in the one place at the one time. And yeah. We had Birdie's Bar at the front, and we had lots of, like, you know, home talent within the camp. So yeah. we had a great time to ourselves.
Yeah, we did. And for me, actually, the last day was the best day, because obviously we'd started like 2 days late. So I think most of Burning Man was still building their campsites 2 days into the people being let in.
Yeah.
It was a very like slow start. And I actually feel like I only had two nights out there where I actually was cycling around with my friends, like exploring. Obviously the gates was locked off a lot of the time. So the word started going around on the Sunday that people were able to get out. So most people that I knew there, apart from like the core team, I had a lot of friends there. I used to live with in Australia, and they was all there, and everybody was just like, we're gonna make a run for it while the gate's there. So, and then it was just us there, like, taking everything down again. And Burning Man, they extended a couple of days to burn the man, to burn the temple. For me, that burn, I saw what Burning Man was about, because everybody was out in full force. Like the art cars just circled the man, and their energy was just absolutely electric there. Like they was just, yeah, it just explained to me what Burning Man was. And I was like, if this is what it's supposed to be like every day, like, yeah. Wow. So next year I would like just to go there and make sure what I need to do, I can get it all done, like, and so I can just have as much time just out, just enjoying it and just
soaking it all in.
Yeah, it was, because it's just such an experience. But that was the best night, because it was like the family was all together. We watched the burn together, and then everybody went out after. And I think, was it Robot Heart that we got to see?
Yeah.
Was following that around for a while. That was really cool.
That was actually brilliant. I feel like my burn only really started, you know, from Saturday onwards. And it was beautiful then, because there was so much work involved with like the camp and the struggles that people had and stuff, that for me to get those extra couple of days to relax into it was just, it was lovely.
Yeah.
But so yeah, we went out to Robot Heart, and then there was a load of our cars around Robot Heart as well.
Yeah.
Were you there till the sun came up as well?
I wasn't, actually, because my lift was leaving 8 or something. I think I was still out following that car around till maybe 3 or something. But
it was good, wasn't it?
Didn't make it to sunrise, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it's been quite a serendipitous journey for you to go to Burning Man. And they say that there's a lot of magic and serendipity at Burning Man as well, and a lot of magic that happens. Have you had, like, any mind-blowing coincidences that have happened on the Playa, or things that have really sort of blown your mind?
One of my best friends, actually, I was living out in Australia. She was still there. So a couple of weeks before it was actually going, she messaged me and was like, oh, you're going to Burning Man, right? I was like, yeah. She's like, me too.
No.
Yeah, she's like, me too. Her fiance now has just surprised her with some tickets. So we get there, and walking around calling like Nicole's boyfriend Rusty. I'm like, what are they calling him Rusty for? Turns out they've known him years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a small world. Yeah, I used to live out in Australia with, like,
no.
with them. Yeah, like, yeah. So like Nicole's like, I've known Nicole since like teenagers.
Yeah,
probably like 20 years close to. She took me out to Australia with her. We both just like left here went there, and we was there for quite a few years, and she got with David out there, and yeah, and then I left. And
so we must have just missed paths then.
They go back like quite a way, David and Dahi. And David, I think, has been going to, he's been with Celtic Chaos, I think. I might be wrong, but I think since it started.
Probably, or else not far off, yeah.
Yeah. And so that was pretty mad. Just like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it just fused everything. I had such a good time with everybody there. And yeah, it was just so nice just to catch up with everybody, like see me calm, see my friends.
And so when she said she was going to Burning Man as well, and then said that you were going to be at the exact same camp as you.
Yeah, but she came with like my friends from Australia as well. So Lucy, Donna Marie was there. And then there's this other thing as well. So then I find out that you was like friends with them too. And it was just like, you didn't even know them from the same place Dahi did. You knew them from where I was in my friendship circle there. So
wow.
Yeah, it was just a few like significant like standout things for me.
You're like, I know I'm definitely in the right place where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. It's just when all these dots start joining up and it's like, okay, this is like supposed to be like this.
Mm-hmm. And then while you were at Burning Man, I suppose you know, you're working so much with energy and frequencies, and for me, the temple has just such a powerful frequency there. Tell me about your experiences of the temple.
First time I see it, I remember cycling past it. And it's quite breathtaking to just look at it. It's such a powerful like symbol standing there, because the detail that's put into that is so intricate. Like, it's spectacular and ginormous to look at. And it's just got this energy to it that you, like, I was like, I'm definitely going in there, but I can't do that yet, because I know the second I get in there, I'm going to start crying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened, actually. And that was when I was with you on that last day, when you was all saying, we're going to wait for the sunrise.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm going to go home past that temple by myself and this experience in there. It's a really powerful thing to be in. Like, you're walking around, like, reading people's messages from people that they've lost, and it's very human, if that makes sense. It's very, like, you see, like, real feelings from people.
As opposed to just the highlight reel in real life, you know?
Yeah,
you
well, just, all the like, you, like, people writing what they wish they could have said to people. People telling people how they feel, and they could have said that while they was here. Just some of these messages, it was just triggering a lot for me in there. And I've had a really, really like crazy few years in my life. Like, I've lost so many people, a lot of family members, my dad, my mum's been like super, super sick a lot of the time. And it's a very powerful experience being in there.
Very cathartic.
Yeah. But at the same time, you feel like you could sit in there for hours. It's just a serious peace in there. I think watching that one burn as well,
mm-hmm.
would be a difficult one, but we didn't make it for that. We had to, like, my ride out of the desert was leaving the morning of the temple burn.
Yeah, it was a difficult one, you know.
And like, the work that they put in, I think that's what helps with the, like, when you look at it, the intricacy and the time spent on that, to be burnt away,
mm-hmm.
it's just like quite symbolic in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just putting that much effort into something that's 100% going to be destroyed, just for people to just like let go of, mm-hmm. like just burn all of their problems away with that. Yeah, it's just amazing. It's
like an offering to the grief,
massively.
An offering to the pain.
Yeah, it's I think that's a key part of Burning Man. I think that's actually why it started, right? I believe, I'm not sure how true this is, but someone said to me that the person who started it had a lot of like things going on in their life at the time,
mm-hmm.
and he just got a group of his friends and was like, I need to just go out into the like, just build something. We're just going to build a man, burn it, and throw all of our problems away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just started doing that, and it just grew. yeah, maybe that would be worth looking into, but I'm pretty sure that's...
And it continues to grow and has built a global community which spans the entire world.
Yeah.
And it's only something that will keep growing.
Yeah.
Look at where we'll be in a year's time. What magnificent adventures and creative journeys we'll all be on, you know, if the last year is anything to go by.
Yeah, yeah, I got some really nice ideas for what I want to do next year already, so we'll see how this develops.
We're going to end on 2023. What has been your most memorable moment from Celtic Chaos? Is there anything that stands out?
I've just had so many, I don't know, everything I've done with you has just been, so magical, really. It would be hard to just pick one. I'd say of my, festival season this year, Celtic Chaos has been the highlight, rather than an individual moment, because everything I've done, Burning Man was obviously amazing, the Mayo Burn was amazing, just going around with this crew is just, anybody really could throw an event or a party and organise it. It's just a case of picking up the phone and getting people to do things. But adding magic to it and putting that spark into an event like that, it's not easy. To create an atmosphere in a space, it's not easy. But you just make it look so effortless. everything you touch is just so sparkly and vibrant and fun and just high energy, and it's been amazing. I'm just so glad to be a part of it, and
it's such a passion project.
Everybody in Ireland is just they just get what I'm doing. Everybody's just I don't know, I've got some real people behind it there that are just really pushing it now, and it's really exciting to just watch things unfold in different places where the project isn't there, do you know what I mean? So for it to be welcomed so much over there, and it's really nice to see people supporting it and getting behind it and understanding it and getting something from it too. And I guess actually probably one of the highlights then really is seeing how people have perceived it over there, because the Irish have just understood it really well.
Of course the plants can communicate with us.
Yeah, that's been a common thing. People have just of course we're connected with nature, but you have a lot more nature, rawer nature, I think, especially to England really. It's on my trips over there, I've been to waterfalls and little forests and things that they look like they're from tropical countries, and lots of mountains and valleys and things. So I think the UK is a bit more disconnected from nature. It's a lot more fields, a lot more flat things, and pretty little parks,
manicured parks.
Yeah, it's a lot more decorative rather than raw nature, really.
The ruggedness and the rawness of the nature.
Yeah, it's just so beautiful to have. The country and the people have just completely stole my heart this year. It's I've learned some great lessons.
And probably the biggest lesson that you've learned is how to embrace the chaos.
Yeah.
What does embrace the chaos mean to you?
I mean, chaos is everything in life, really. Everything is chaotic. You have to embrace it. It would probably depress you otherwise, if you looked into it too much.
Resistance.
One of the things I've really took from Ireland is the first thing people say to each other, from observations that I've seen over the time of you guys, is the first thing you ask is, what's the crack? And when you break that down, essentially asking people, tell me something good.
What's the fun?
Where's the fun at? What's going on? That I find is it's such a good way to just start a conversation with people, and it's very positive right from the start. And the rest of the world is not really like that. It's oh, how are you doing? With a bit more of a miserable tone, and there's not really this positive, high energy there.
It's your crack is your currency, I always say.
Yeah.
How fun are you? Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's the best way to just like embrace the chaos is find the crack.
Oh, Joey, thank you so much for being on Embrace the Chaos. It's been a pleasure spending this last year with you. And I look forward
to... Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And here's to the next year and all the years still to come.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I can't wait.
The music that you've listened to in this episode of Embrace the Chaos is by Malison Incus from County Cork, and the title of the track is Shocking. You can stream this anywhere that you listen to music. Mm.